Hi, it's Patrick here, and today we have a special guest, Clark Boyd.
Emphasis on the special. Yes, Patrick, thank you. Always good to be on the podcast.
And I don't think we've spoken in the podcast since you came back from Belgium, which was quite a while ago.
Yes. Almost right. It's all a vague and distant memory at this point.
Yeah, and back then you were talking about how things in Belgium kind of function reasonably well, except when it comes to language.
It is one of the flashpoints, and it's the beauty of living in a country where half the population, or a little bit more than half the population, speaks Flemish or Dutch, and the other half the population speaks French.
And you're here to tell me that things have improved and everybody has gotten along. And as far as I remember, there wasn't a government for the longest time based on this linguistic dispute. Now everything is hunky-dory, right?
Yeah, it took them about 19 months while I was living there to form a government, 500 and some odd days. And I wish I could tell you that things are improving, but we've had a couple of, for lack of a better word, incidents in the last few weeks that kind of you look at and say, wow, this country really cannot get past its linguistic problems.
All right, so tell me about the first one.
This is classic because it involves Brussels, the city's bid to host the 2020 European Championships in football, soccer, as we call it over here. And if your listeners are soccer fans, they may remember back in the mid-1980s, there was a huge disaster at a stadium. Well, what happened was a wall actually collapsed. The stadium was in such a bad state. And what they did afterwards was basically shut the stadium down, said, we're not playing soccer here anymore. They turned it into an athletics facility and renamed it King Baudouin Stadium. Well, now the deal is get rid of King Baudouin Stadium. We're going to build a new 60,000-seat stadium. But it's all getting hung up because that area of Brussels, you have to understand, Brussels is the only part of Belgium that is officially bilingual. But all of the outer communities, you can drive along that outer ring around Brussels and you'll just go in between Flanders and Wallonia, Dutch-speaking, French-speaking. They move the stadium, less than a mile away, and you're in the Dutch-speaking part, which means it's crossed the linguistic divide, and the Flemish are saying, no, if you're going to build it in Flanders, then it's going to be Dutch-speaking because that's the official language.
But this is absolutely crazy. I mean, this comes at a time when, I'm sorry to say this is crazy, I don't live in one of these places that is riven in this way, but this comes at a time when the Belgian soccer team, national soccer team, is probably the best in our lifetime.
The Red Devils.
And they're doing magnificently well. As far as I know, I've never read of any linguistic issues that the soccer team has, maybe because they're made up of either immigrants or the sons of immigrants.
And they all just speak English anyway as the default language.
Right. I mean, it just seems astonishing that the Belgian people or Belgian politicians could get caught up on something like a national stadium at this time. I mean, if you're going to have a national stadium, it makes sense to have the languages that are official in that nation represented.
Yeah, it is a little bit disheartening. And I think you probably put the finest point on it when you said it's the politicians that are getting a mileage out of this and not the people. I think by and large, when I talk to Belgians who are soccer fans, they're very, very happy that the Red Devils are doing so well. And spats like this seem kind of silly. I think the Minister of Sport probably said it best. He said, can we just not get hung up on Dutch and French? Because let's face it, we're all going to speak English if the Euro Championships come here. It is kind of the default language in Belgium anyway for people. But again, it's just this thing where any of those communities around that outer ring of Brussels, there's always this language issue, and there's always somebody willing to bring it up and try to use it for political purposes.
Wow, yeah. When you have these societies in which more than one language is spoken or there is more than one language group, they can often be places that do not have that many officially bilingual zones. I mean, you mentioned Brussels being the only bilingual part of Belgium. The more the languages there are, the greater the friction that can be between those languages, and so the less a minority language in a particular region is recognized.
Well, and you're always playing that game in Belgium too, and everybody's making it's not just about language. The language is only pointing out the bigger clash, which is the clash between that sort of Northern European Flemish Dutch culture and that Southern European kind of Mediterranean French culture. And that's true to a certain extent. But there, I think the cynical part of me always comes back to, well, what this is really about is money. The Flemish, as they see it, are tired of paying their taxes to go to the poor French-speaking south. And this is just another example of, hey, you're going to build this stadium in our territory. We're going to we want the language rights to it. We really want is the money rights to it. And this leads us perfectly into the other example, which came up recently.
And tell me that this is has a little bit more gravitas about it.
Okay, well, you would think that if football, if soccer can't bring the nation together, certainly cute pandas from China could bring the nation together.
No. We're not talking. How can there possibly be a language issue over pandas?
Well, it's again, we're talking about how the language issue points to wider splits, and it's all about the, you know, kind of probably all about the money at the end of the day. So Belgium was going to be given this gift of a couple of pandas from China.
Panda diplomacy.
And lo and behold, they decided to put them at this wildlife park called Paradeza, which is in the Wallonian region.
Uh-oh, that means it's
and
not
you
in
can
the
imagine
region.
The Antwerp Zoo got a little upset about Antwerp, of course, being up in the Flemish part. They got very upset about it, saying, why? We have the best facilities for this. But then Paradeza came back and said, yes, but we've just built a bespoke multi-million euro facility in our Sichuan garden section, which will be perfect for the pandas. The prime minister, Elio Di Rupo, son of Italian immigrants actually, is French-speaking. And, you know, everybody's claiming favoritism. That's why the pandas are going there. So even something like pandas, they can't even get together on this. At the end of the day, I'm sitting there as an American looking at the distance between Antwerp and where the Paradeza Park is. And I'm like, that is nothing, people. There's it's not like it's a huge choice to go to Antwerp or go to here to see the pandas. People are going to come and see the pandas. But again, the Flemish are saying, yeah, people are going to come and see the pandas. And they're going to go to Wallonia to do it. And they're going to end up getting the money from it and not us.
Wow. You haven't been there for, what, a year and a half now?
Yeah.
Something like that. But I just wonder if there is any end game, any possibility of an end game, or whether this is, in a way, the end game, the kind of peaceful proxy for something that in an earlier era might have been violence, and whether this is, in fact, you know, modern Europe.
I think in a way it is. I mean, you're never going to – I mean, all the Belgians will be the – no matter which, whether you're on the Flemish side – the Wallonian side, or you just really don't care. They'll say, well, the last thing on earth anybody's going to do in this country is, you know, take up arms against each other or, you know, try to separate the country by force. But you certainly see a very, very convoluted federal system there where the language areas have almost as much power as the federal, even more power in some instances than the federal. And you just see this gradual devolution away from each other. And as long as there's that sticking point over, I hate to keep coming back to it, but I think as long as there's that sticking point over money and Flanders continues to grow at the pace that it's growing while Wallonia sort of wallows in sort of the 60s and 70s and isn't able to do economically the things that Flanders does, there's always going to be this feeling on the part of the Flemish, hey, our tax money is just being bled down to this other part of the country. And as long as that is there, and there, it, which is, you know, there's just not that, you don't get that sense of like Belgian community coming together. We're a tiny country in this little corner of Europe, and we host the European Union, for heaven's sakes, and we want to host the most important soccer championship in Europe, for heaven's sakes. It, that just doesn't overcome those little very petty squabbles over these sorts of things. At the end of the day, I see them as very, very petty squabbles. But to the people who live in those communities, they're obviously incredibly, incredibly important and meaningful.
The Big Show's Clark Boyd. Now to a famous Belgian invention, which I hope that everybody in Belgium can embrace, and that is Tintin, you know, the young comic book adventurer with the dog called Snowy in English, Milou in the original French, who traveled the world getting into trouble and solving crimes. And Tintin has been translated into dozens of languages. He even got translated into that Hollywood tongue known as Spielberg a couple of years ago. But until this month, he hadn't been translated into Scots. Scots, you ask? Maybe you ask. I'll post a previous pod on Scots where people who know what they're talking about, as opposed to me, they explain Scots. It's a dialect of English. Maybe I'm getting into trouble by even calling it that. But in any case, it's spoken in several different parts of Scotland. In fact, you could say it's several different dialects. Well, now, ahead of the translation of A Tintin Story into Scottish Gaelic, comes one in Scots, L'Île Noire in the original, the Black Island in English. In Scots, the Dirk Isle, that is D-E-R-K. The translator is Susan Rennie, who's worked as a lexicographer for both English and Scots dictionaries. She also teaches at the University of Glasgow. And she told the BBC's Sarah Montague that the Black Island is the obvious Tintin story to translate into Scots because much of the action takes place in Scotland.
It starts in Belgium, but Tintin ends up in England first of all, and then it goes further north into Scotland.
Well, and tell us about the challenges of translating something like Tintin.
Well, any translator into Scots faces a number of challenges. First of all, you have to decide what form of Scots you're going to use, because there is no standard form of the language. You have to decide whether you're going to translate it into a particular dialect of Scots, or will you use more of an amalgamation, using words from different dialects and perhaps mixing it with more literary Scots. And also decide on your spelling system, whether to use very traditional Scots spellings or to perhaps use more anglicised ones.
Can you give us an example of a passage from Tintin then?
Yes, I can give you a quick sequence. This is a sequence where Tintin is in the village of Inverdoom. He's been following some villains north. I won't give spoilers to give the plot away, but basically he's talking to one of the locals in the pub. Okay. He says to him, "Tack tent, 3 months syne twa lads here was bent set in visiting the isle. For by warnings and spains they set off in a wee boat. The water was sma, the wind was loon, but neither sick nor sound has there been of them since syne."
Fabulous.
That's his warning Tintin from going there, but of course he doesn't heed the warnings, he goes anyway.
Susan Rennie, Scots translator of the Tintin adventure L'Île Noire, the Black Island, speaking with the BBC's Sarah Montague. And that's it today. I'll post some related material at theworld.org/language. There's also the Facebook page, The World in Words, and I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Patrick Cox. That's P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. See you next time.